This is Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney. On this segment of the program, the topic is, and the discussion will be about, the California State Bar's publication, Seniors and the Law, a guide for maturing Californians. It's funded by the California Bar Foundation. For those of you who may not be in California but are listening to this program via the public radio satellite, although this was designed by the State Bar of California, it's an excellent guide, and I suggest if you listen to this program and you would like to get a copy of this, I'll tell you how to do it as we progress. My guests are Colleen McAvoy, a partner in the San Mateo, California, by the way, law firm of McGlashan and Sorrell, and Peter Stern, whose law office is in Palo Alto, California. My guests are specialists in estate planning, trust, and probate law certified by the California Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar of California. This segment of Your Legal Rights is funded by the California Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar, which certifies specialization in 11 fields of law. Additional funding of this particular program is by the Trust and Estate section of the State Bar, and additional funding for the program itself is also made possible by the Family Law section of the State Bar and the Lawyer Referral Service of the Bar Association of San Francisco. Colleen, I welcome you to the program.
Thanks. I'm happy to be here.
Very nice to have you here. And Peter, do you hear me?
I hear you loud and clear.
Oh, you sound very good.
As usual, it's great to participate.
This is great to have you here. Let's start with this, if you would. What I'd like to do is, because I'm very impressed with this, and of course, I guess all of you, I hope you know, the primary funder, one of the primary funders of this program, and has been for many, many years, is the State Bar of California, the various entities involved. But I'm very impressed with this particular guide. It's a new publication, it's a revised publication, Seniors and the Law, a Guide for Maturing Californians. And what I want to suggest to you, wherever you may be, if you are interested in getting a free copy of this, and I highly suggest it, It is 15 pages in length, and they will send it to you, so you can either call the State Bar and ask for this. It's 415-538-2280, 415-538-2280, or if you have a computer available to you and you're on the Internet, it's www.calbar.ca.gov. www.calbar.ca.gov, and then you can go to the section that talks about pamphlets and guides and see how you can order this. And again, it's free. Why don't we do this? Please, Colleen, let's start with talking a little bit about planning ahead for health care. Would you do that?
Sure.
Briefly?
Yeah, one of the sections of the guide addresses planning ahead, and they do a really good job of giving a good overview on that topic, covering do I need a will, do I need a trust, what is a living will, also known as an advance health care directive. And they mention an interesting form that Peter and I, when we were preparing for this show, found that we shared a little bit of a pet peeve about. And this form is called a POLST form.
P-U-L-S-T.
P-O-L-S-T.
I'm sorry, P-O-L-S-T.
Yeah, and it stands for Physician Orders for Life-Sustaining Treatment. And don't get me wrong, the form was created for a wonderful purpose. It was primarily for the last 6 months to 1 year of life, and it is completed by either the patient sitting down with the doctor, or it could be completed by the patient's healthcare agent, again, sitting down with the doctor. So this POLST form is a physician's order. It travels with the patient. What our peeve arises from is, we're seeing this POLST form being put in front of people as they enter assisted living facilities, other kinds of care facilities, being treated as almost a requirement for admittance, and in fact being put in front of people who are nowhere near the end of life. And I've had clients call and tell me very proudly they completed a Pulsed, and I find they've checked the boxes for no resuscitation. And yet they're still playing golf twice a week.
Why do you have a problem with that, though, Colleen?
Well, for one thing, the Pulsed may completely contradict their wishes that they've expressed in an advance health care directive, first of all.
All right.
Mm-hmm. And also, as I said, because the Pulsed was really designed for end of life, these very difficult decisions about do I want to be resuscitated if I'm unconscious? Do I want antibiotics if I have an infection? Mm-hmm. Do I want artificial nutrition and hydration? Our answers to those questions are going to be very different when we realize our end is near than the answers will be while we're still walking, driving, or playing golf, as I mentioned.
And when a Pulse should be filled out, is that in conjunction with the person's physician?
It's not done with the lawyer.
Yeah.
You can't do it by yourself.
Okay.
You are doing it with a physician, or if you're beyond communicating knowingly, your healthcare agent or healthcare surrogate can sit down with your doctor and fill it out. It has sections for resuscitation, for medical intervention, comfort-focused treatment, artificial administration of nutrition, and it gets really specific. Don't get me wrong, again, it's a great form. Just Peter and I shared that we were both seeing it being used, I think, way more broadly than is necessarily appropriate.
Peter, what's the difference between a health care directive and this Pulse that Colleen has just talked about?
Let's start with how you can put a healthcare directive in place.
That'd be good.
I often will prepare a healthcare directive for clients as part of estate planning, although I encourage them to have a dialogue with their physician if they have an opportunity to do so. The document does not require the participation of a physician, and it's an indication of what they would like down the road. They can indicate that they either have or have not signed a do not resuscitate request as part of another document, but normally they would indicate what their end-of-life healthcare preferences would be, who they want to be in charge of decision-making at that time, whether they want the form to be effective now or only when they lose capacity, and they can make choices such as whether they want to be an organ donor. They can also add additional language at the end about having special care provisions. They want palliative care. They want to avoid certain procedures. Some of my medically trained clients want to avoid certain types of medical treatment because they've seen horrendous results when it's given. But the Pulsed is done with a doctor. And Colleen's point was that, you know, often we see the Pulsed being handed to the client when the client arrives at a facility as if it is the kind of form that will be part of the record and that they will keep right then and there. And the doctor has nothing to do with it.
So in other words, it's someone who's at, let's say, a nursing home or whatever it may be, who's not a medical person, possibly or probably. Is that right?
No, that it can happen where you have not even the doctor is there, but an assistant, nurse's assistant, someone who is not at all qualified to fill out the Pulsed out will sit with with the family member and complete the form. And the whole point, Colleen's client who is out playing golf twice a week certainly does not want to have a Pulsed in place saying, oh, and by the way, if I have a sudden cardiac arrest, don't even bother to try to get the old ticker going again. I mean, there are some people that may feel that way, but most of my clients would generally like to be resuscitated if they have any expectation of enjoying the rest of their life. And we know there's always risk if your heart stops and you're subject to resuscitation that things might not go right. But, you know, for people who are pretty much, you know, they're seniors, but they're still enjoying their life very much, they generally do not want to have a DNR order in place.
DNR is...
Do not resuscitate.
Do not resuscitate. The Advanced Healthcare Directive, is this something that should be prepared in by the person in conjunction with the person's attorney or not, Peter?
Well, I would recommend they have some input from their physician, but the attorney often prepares the form.
Yes.
As part of an estate planning package. I mean, we do them using the California Medical Association form as the preferred paper vehicle for this for the Advanced Healthcare Directive.
By the way, I want to come back for a moment for all of you to know this, in that the California version of the program is also aired. The first half hour is recorded and then sent out to 15 other stations in California. Most of those stations are part of the Radio Bilingue Network, which has listeners who speak both English and Spanish, and Seniors and the Law, this guide we're talking about, is also in Spanish if you want it. So let me repeat again, frankly, for all of you who may be interested in this, if you'd like to get a free copy of Seniors and the Law, a Guide for Maturing Californians, you can either call the California State Bar, 415-538-2200. If you have access to the internet, you can go to the website www.calbar.ca.gov and then look for pamphlets and guides, and you'll be able to see the order form. Again, it's a free guide. It's really outstanding. All the pamphlets are free also. Peter, I wonder if you'd talk a little bit, frankly, about long-term care. What thoughts do you have about long-term care, briefly, for the listeners?
Well, there is a good discussion in the brochure, and I believe it's at page 13, Finding a Caregiver or a Nursing Home. By the way, if you're looking at a situation where, for long-term care, if you need a nursing home, you want for sure to be able to have access to the website put together by California Advocates for Nursing Home Reform, abbreviated CANR. And that website, which is listed in the resource guide on page 15 of the pamphlet, is www.canhr.org, where if you click on Finding a Nursing Home, you will find county-by-county lists of nursing homes listed by the city that they're in within the county, with the ratings that the facilities have. So you can see whether they have bad records, there are citations that have been issued, complaints that have been filed, and how they stack up compared with other facilities. So that if a facility has 15 complaints last year and the California average is 3, then you might want to, you know, take a second or third look before you decide to put your loved one there.
Mm-hmm.
Paying for long-term care is a major, major problem. The average cost of private pay in California, as determined by the Department of Health Care Services for last year, was over $8,000.
Per month.
In my county, Santa Clara County, San Mateo County, the average is more $10,500 a month. And that is a pretty big bill to pay, especially if your loved one has dementia and is looking at long-term care for maybe, you know, 2 or 3 years or even longer.
Certainly, Peter and Colleen, if you are, let's say, not an elderly person, it is probably wise for someone to consider getting long-term care insurance, wouldn't you, while you're still relatively young, as opposed to waiting until you're in your 60s, 70s, or maybe even later, Colleen?
Yeah, obviously, if you wait too long, the insurance is going to be not offered to you at all or will be financially out of your reach. But long-term care insurance, in my experience, has gotten much better. It's a much better product than it was when it was first introduced 20 or so years ago, at least. That's about when I became aware of it. And I know that California, the state of California, has a partnership for long-term care where there can be benefits to buying your long-term care insurance through that program. And I don't recall the details of it other than I believe it allows the family to keep more funds because they have this insurance and yet still benefit from Medi-Cal?
No, that it works. It works as a addition to what you can keep in,
right,
after recovery cuts in.
Exactly.
So if you have received $200,000 worth of benefits from the Partnership Long-Term Care Program, then when you die, you can leave $200,000 worth of protected assets to your loved ones. Where otherwise, if you don't have insurance under that program, when you die, the state of California will come in and seek to collect from your estate, if you are not survived by a spouse or by a minor or a disabled or a blind child, they will attempt to collect what they have paid for your long-term care. Let me throw in if we want to continue on the insurance, I'm going to leave it with Colleen for a few minutes. Did you want to add more to that topic, Colleen?
Not particularly, other than to mention the website to look at for the California Partnership for Long-Term Care is dhcs.ca.gov. And if you have a financial advisor or a CPA, or you just like to do research into these issues, I encourage you to, because it can really be a lifesaver. Not all forms of long-term care can be properly addressed in a skilled nursing facility, which is what Medi-Cal will cover for you.
But give the website again, if you would you?
Yeah, it's D like dog, H like house, C like cat, S like snake, .ca for California, .gov.
And what does DHCS stand for? Do you know?
Department of Healthcare Services.
Right. Peter, say that again. Department of what?
Department of Healthcare Services. I'm not sure they'd like being compared to a snake.
Nice going, Colleen.
Sorry. Yeah.
Sometimes it fits. No, that's the agency that the long-term care program, Medi-Cal program, is organized by, and they're the ones that collect the money after you die.
Yeah.
And I have a lot of experience in dealing with them. By the way, their recovery people are actually, in my opinion, very decent people to deal with.
Mm-hmm.
I have them on the phone all the time, it's not that they make deals or anything, but they are polite, they are considerate. They give you time to get documents together. But the recovery program has one other thing I want to throw in right now, Chuck.
Yes.
We are now looking at the mandatory managed care for Medi-Cal throughout the state of California. This means that if you go into a nursing home, and the nursing home must be now covered by one of the managed care programs in the county that you live in order to be eligible for being paid by Medi-Cal. Now, the state, the department, will pay to the managed care program a particular fee called a capitated fee for your care wherever you are. And it is that fee that the state will recover when you die, even though you may have paid a share of cost for your nursing home bed, your share of cost being what the state judges you are able to pay from your income. When you die, the state will try to collect from your estate, not the actual amount that your share that you had to pay or that the state had to pay for your care to make the nursing home whole for what it has paid for you, but what it has paid the managed care plan, which may or may not be what the nursing home actually got. That's a fairly complicated
thing. It sounds like it.
Let me bottom line it.
Yeah.
You may get charged a lot more than you thought you were going to have to pay for your long-term care.
Mm-hmm.
So there is a high premium on seeking to avoid recovery for what you have paid for long-term care if you can work it out. This is where the planners come in, like my field, many of my colleagues who work with clients who are going into long-term care and looking at financing it. When you make the decision to finance through the Medi-Cal program, you always have to look at how you can avoid recovery.
How do you qualify for the Medi-Cal program? What are the basic qualifications?
Well, a single person, no more than $2,000 in countable assets. That does not include the home, the retirement accounts, or non-cash value life insurance mm-hmm. or tangible property.
So if you had $10,000 in a bank account, does that disqualify you?
Yeah, that would disqualify you, but if you take the $10,000 and you buy a fine violin and put it in the back room and have your son play it once a week for you in the nursing home, that violin is tangible property and is considered exempt.
Is it really? That's interesting.
If you have the money in the bank, it is not exempt. If you take all of your money in the bank and you buy fine Persian carpets, you have translated the money into tangible property, and you would not be ineligible for Medi-Cal.
Okay.
Now, a couple can have more. A couple can have up to $120,000, approximately, in countable assets. And keep in mind also, the retirement accounts do not count as an available asset.
I see.
You have to get money paid from the retirement account for your care, but the amount in the account does not count the way a bank account would count.
What I'd like to do before we end the statewide version of the program, and we still have a few minutes, is I would like you to talk a little bit about how do you choose a caregiver, and what are the concerns? What would you recommend, basically? And of course, time goes so quickly on this program that we can't get into the great detail, but I want to give you a chance to talk a little bit about that. Would you start with that, Peter?
Of course, and this is on page 13 of the booklet for people to have access to the pamphlet. Well, of course, if you want to, most people want to stay at home as long as they can.
Yes.
So you have to keep in mind that if you go out and you want to hire a caregiver for your loved one, you have the choice between being in charge personally of finding the caregiver and paying the caregiver, or using an agency. If you use an agency, the hourly rate is going to be much higher. But on the other hand, you have the protection of knowing that the agency will be paying the mandatory taxes and the withholding, and also will assume the liability for what your beloved parent might be doing. If your parent hurts the caregiver, and if the caregiver is hired by an agency, then the agency maintains the liability for the caregiver. If, on the other hand, you hire the caregiver personally, not through an agency, and your loved one hurts the caregiver, you will find yourself liable under a recent Supreme Court decision in California.
That's very interesting. That's very interesting. You, however, if you hire directly, pardon me, a caregiver, do you have, the relative, the son, the daughter, whoever this may be, do you have a responsibility as far as the caregiver is concerned for Social Security?
Yes, absolutely.
And withholding taxes, et cetera?
That's right. You have to do all of the payroll formalities mm-hmm. that you would as an employer, as any kind of employer.
You might remember the problems that President Clinton had when he wanted to hire an attorney general back in 1993. And the first two people that he nominated had what we call nanny tax problems.
Right.
And they were very dynamic women in the professions. One was a judge.
Yes.
I don't remember Zoe Baird's profession was at that point. But mm-hmm. these were both very, very highly qualified professional people who had made hires and had not fully documented the need to pay the appropriate taxes, and they had to withdraw. It was a great shame.
And what recommendation do both of you have, for example, in selecting a caregiver, or pardon me, in selecting perhaps an agency who can provide a caregiver? Do you have some recommendations, Colleen, in terms of what you should be looking for in terms of just the agency itself?
Well, I personally, when I have a client who asks me this question, I consult with private professional fiduciaries in that county who will have firsthand experience with those agencies, and ask them for their recommendations and their review of how the caregivers provided by the agencies have done, how reliable they are, what's the turnover, and the billing, how the billing is handled.
Is there a certification by the state of California for these agencies that will provide caregivers or not? Is that monitored by the state at all?
Well, they're certainly bonded. I believe, Peter, you can correct me that these agencies are licensed and...
I must admit, I don't have an answer to that.
Okay.
We're not completely sure.
I really don't know whether the agencies themselves are licensed. Now, the people who operate them usually have certifications through the state. As for the agencies themselves, I really don't know.
I see. Okay. All right. Well,
Chuck, could I interject for just a minute before we run out of our
half hour? We have about a minute left.
Great. I just want to mention very quickly some property tax opportunities for seniors, that are two of which are mentioned in the guide and one of which is not. And the two mentioned in the guide, one is coming up in 2016, where seniors with low income, $35,000 a year or less, may be able to apply to defer their property taxes completely until they die or sell the house. Mm-hmm. So look for that. That's coming up.
In 2016.
2016.
All right.
The guide also mentions the Proposition 60 and 90, where if you're over 55 or disabled and you want to sell your home, you can downsize to a smaller home and take your low property tax base.
Your
Prop 13 that you enjoy in the home you've had for 40 years, you can transfer that to your new home in the same county or to one of 10 counties in California that will accept you. You could move from San Mateo to San Diego, buy a smaller house, and still take your property tax base. And the third is a fairly new exception for co-tenants. For example, brother and sister have a home together. One dies and leaves the house to the other, they can defer their property tax reassessment.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Really? And is that a new law also?
It was enacted in 2012, effective late in early 2013, I think.
Yeah, Chuck, I want to jump back in very quickly.
Peter, let's do this. Peter, let me interrupt you because we've come to the end of the half hour, and I'll get back to you in just a moment.
Okay.
What we're going to, let me give you, by the way, I'm going to get back to Peter Stern in just a moment, but I'm now inviting you, wherever you may be, whether you're listening to us in the Bay Area, San Francisco Bay Area, if you're listening to us on the internet at www.kow.org, or if you may be listening to us on one of the stations outside of California via the public radio satellite. Our toll-free number is 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. For those of you who may have come in just a little bit late in the program, this is Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney. We're talking about a very fine guide that has been put together. It's the latest version put together by the State Bar of California, funded by a very fine organization that actually has put up the money for this, the California Bar Foundation, which is a different entity than the State Bar. And it's the pamphlet or guide is called Seniors and the Law, A Guide for Maturing Californians. My guests on the program are Peter Stern and Colleen McAvoy. They are specialists in estate planning, trust, and probate law certified by the California Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar of California. And so if you have a question, a comment, or whatever, and would like to join us on the air with your question, your comment, whatever, please feel free to do so at this point, 866-798-8255. And Peter, sorry for interrupting you, but I just have to end the half hour because, we, as you know, we record that and then we send it out to 15 other stations that will air that half hour next week. So what was it you wanted to say?
Very quickly, Chuck, at page 13 of the pamphlet, there's a paragraph explaining that caregiving agencies must be licensed, they have to be licensed. The Department of Public Health is the verification source for a caregiver's license. So there is an agency licensing requirement. I wanted to come back on that.
That's good. I'm glad you did. And One of the things that I feel is valuable about this pamphlet, Seniors and the Law, A Guide for Maturing Californians, that in that we are now on the National Public Radio satellite, I don't know how many stations are carrying the program, whether live or delayed, but this is a wonderful source for people who would like to educate themselves as they're getting older, or perhaps if you are a relative, a son, a daughter, and you're concerned about your parents, this is maybe something that you'd like to get. It is free through the State Bar of California, and I think it would be an excellent source, whether you're in California or not. It's a great place to start to educate yourself, whether you're an older person or whether you're parents. This is something you'd like to do for your parents. All right, we've got a number of people who would like to talk with you, and we're going to start with Jean. Welcome to the program.
Oh, thank you. I have a question. One of your guests mentioned something about brother and sister owning real estate. One of them dies. What happens to, and then the additional property tax? I'm not sure about that, but let me explain really quickly what my situation is. Two unmarried women living together for many years. One of them owns the house. Eventually, gets the other's name on the deed. This happened recently, in the last year, and it did not trigger a property tax, a reassessment.
Right.
But when I die, and I have cancer, so I might die soon, I don't know, I want to make sure that my friend, who I've shared this house with all these years, will be able to afford the house. But I'm not quite sure when the property tax, will there be a reassessment, when will that be triggered? When I die or when she dies? Or can you explain that to me?
Sure. The basics of Prop 13 are that we get to keep our property taxes at the basic level when we purchased the property or otherwise acquired it until there's a change in ownership. And change in ownership includes our death. Now, there's a bunch of exceptions to that. There are exceptions for spouses and registered domestic partners. There's a parent-child exception. There's a very limited grandparent-grandchild exception. It's not as broad as the parent-child. So the difficulty is when you have two unrelated people or unmarried people or brother and sister who co-own a house, they live there together. If one died, that person's interest would be reassessed. This new co-tenancy exclusion says no, the property will not be reassessed at that first death as long as you meet the criteria. So you have to both have occupied as the principal residence for at least the 1 year prior to the death occurring. You have to both own the property. You don't have to own it 50-50. It could be 99%, 1%. And the property has to end up 100% owned by the surviving person of the two of you, whatever your relationship might be.
Yes.
And if that is all met and you sign the affidavit form that the State Board of Equalization has created, there will be no property tax reassessment. It's not change in ownership that triggers property taxes going up to fair market value.
Colleen, as I hear what you're talking about, and I also hear about Jean's concern about what may happen if she dies before her friend does, and she wants to make sure her friend is protected and they live together for a number of years, who should Jean at this point see to you know, get some nose-to-nose legal advice?
Sure. Well, it would be great to go to an attorney just to double-check that all...
Are we talking about an estate planning attorney?
Could be an estate planning attorney or a real estate attorney, just to make sure that you have all your ducks in a row. Or if you just want to go to the State Board of Equalization website, they have wonderful frequently asked questions, FAQs. They go through all the scenarios, including this exact scenario, to explain what's called the co-tenancy exclusion. Mm-hmm. If you want to get technical, it's Revenue and Taxation Code Section
62.3.
And if you meet all the criteria, then the house does not get a big bump up in property tax just because one of the two of you dies.
Gene, I understand that you are in Oakland, which is Alameda County. Is that correct?
That's right.
Have you seen a lawyer about this at all?
I saw three different lawyers and asked them this, and everybody was a little bit fuzzy on it. And
no kidding.
I finally went to the county clerk's office in downtown Oakland and asked the clerk.
Yeah.
And she explained it to me, and I put my friend's name on the deed. But it was a year ago, and I forgot what she said about what happens when I die. So that's why I'm glad.
Well, yeah. The clerk is not in a position to give legal advice. My suggestion is so that you feel comfortable about this, and you have something to write with?
Yeah.
Yeah. I think, if I may suggest this to you, I think you should call the couple of numbers I'm going to give you.
Okay.
I think you should call Lawyer Referral for the Alameda County Bar Association. See if you can't get perhaps an appointment with either an estate planning attorney or maybe a taxation attorney.
Yeah.
Or a real estate attorney. And that number, Gene, is 510-302-2222. 510-302-2222. One of the other things that I feel is very important for people, and I'm not trying to get jobs for lawyers. That's not the purpose of this program. The purpose of this program is to help consumers who need help to avoid problems, et cetera, et cetera. It wouldn't hurt if you were to try to contact the California Board of Legal Specialization, find out perhaps who an estate planning attorney may be, or a taxation certified specialist, estate planning certified specialist, or a taxation certified specialist. And I'll give you those, the phone number for the Board of Legal Specialization, as well as the website. That number, by the way, is 415-538-2100. 415-538-2100.
Mm-hmm.
And for the website, it's www.calbar.ca.gov. And then go to the left of your screen, your computer, to where it says Legal Specialist. Click that on and put in Oakland or Alameda County, and it'll tell you who the certified specialists are. It may be well worth it for you, considering this is a very significant issue, I would think, that is confronting you, to meet face-to-face with an attorney. So I wish you best of luck.
Oh, well, thank you for that suggestion about a specialist.
Yeah.
And
Did you get that okay, both the phone number and the
I did.
And the website's good. Good luck, Gene.
I also thank your guest with his suggestion about the State Board of Equalization website as well.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Hang in there.
Okay.
Take care.
Right.
Thank you very much for calling. Our toll-free number, 866-798-8255. Support for KLW is provided by the Bar Association of San Francisco. If you have a legal problem, you may need to talk to a lawyer. The San Francisco Bar Association's Lawyer Referral Service can arrange an appointment for you to meet with an attorney experienced in the area of law related to your situation in both San Francisco as well as Marin County. For a referral to a lawyer or the Bay Area Mediation Services Program, call 415-989-1616. That's 415-989-1616. If you're in San Mateo County, California, the San Mateo County Bar Association also has a lawyer referral service. You can call your own 650-369-4149, 650-369-4149. If you're in any other county in California, every county has a bar association and a lawyer referral service. You can call your own during normal business hours. Tell them what the problem is. They'll do their best to find an experienced attorney for you to help you with the problem that you're confronted with. And with minor exception in California, for a half an hour consultation with an attorney, and of course, a half an hour goes awful fast, but you'll pay $25 to $35. It's a great way to start to learn what your rights and obligations may be or what the problems may be. That money does not go to the attorney. It goes to the lawyer referral service as a public service. So there you are. Okay, let's go to Bill. Bill, welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Thank you. I got a question related to an elder person, parent that has some mental deficiencies, memory problems, of that nature. And what are her rights on where she wants to live versus what her children want her to live? If there's a dispute among the children of where she should live, and she agrees with one of her children and disagrees with another.
Is this elderly parent competent, Bill?
Well, that's a subjective question.
Yeah, it is, of course.
That's kind of what I'm not sure. I mean, you can talk to this person and you know have conversations with her, but she also has some mental deficiencies
mm-hmm.
too.
Mm-hmm.
But she's adamant about where she wants to live.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But the question is, does she have any legal right on where she could live, where she wants to live?
Where does she live at this point, Bill?
She lives in San Rafael.
San Rafael, which is Marin County.
Yeah.
Well, Peter, do you have any comment for Bill on this, basically?
Sure. It sounds like about three of my cases right now. Yeah, I mean, mother certainly has a right to determine where she wants to live. If the issue then becomes, is she competent to make that decision, that pushes it to a different area. But you start with personal autonomy. I mean, even our conservatorship law, where we have a law to protect people who cannot provide their own care, custody, and control, has great provisions for protecting the wishes of the conservatee about where one should live. In this case, mom is not under conservatorship. She is free to determine where she wants to live. Her children cannot dictate where she can live.
Mm-hmm.
Now, circumstances may change those facts, but as you presented it, mom is the one who should be in charge. If she wants to live, if she owns a house and she wants to live in that house, and she can afford the cost of that house, she certainly should be allowed to live there. Is it safe for her? We don't know that.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it isn't safe. There's a million factors, Bill, and you know I would start simply by saying her autonomy should be respected, and then you have to take it from there.
But doesn't she, at this point, Peter, as Bill has explained, one of the kids wants her to live one place, another kid disagrees with that. When I say kid, I mean child of the mother. At this point, isn't it important that the mother actually retain an attorney to help her so that she gets something definite in terms of what she wants to do with where she wants to live? Or what do you think about that, Peter?
No, I don't think it's necessary.
Really?
Off the top of my head that she should have a lawyer.
Uh-huh.
These decisions often can be worked out with family, with social workers, with case managers. Once you start getting us in the fray, Chuck, kind of like the guy who wants to buy a boat. He wants to buy a sailboat. Is he better off going to the shower with a handful of $20 bills and take a shower and tear them up one at a time? Or will he go out and spend the money on the boat? No, I don't want to downplay going to an attorney, but since I am an attorney. But I hate to see these decisions automatically escalated into his attorney versus her attorney type things. So many of my cases end up like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I try to avoid that if we can.
Do you have any comments, Colleen?
Yeah, my one comment would be if mom has done advanced planning and has created a living trust, put her house in that living trust, and named her oldest daughter a successor trustee, once mom becomes incapacitated and perhaps her doctor certifies she can no longer be trustee herself, now decisions about that property will be in the hands of the successor trustee, let's say the oldest daughter. And so that's where obviously mom, if it's a revocable living trust and she's still competent, she can revoke her trust or she can revoke the appointment of her daughter as trustee
if she is competent.
If she's competent.
Do you know there's a trust here, Bill?
Yes, there is.
Okay.
So that's just, as Peter said, boy, there could be all kinds of facts and circumstances that affect the outcome here. But Peter's absolutely correct that unless mom is conserved, she and only she decides where she lives. Mm-hmm. That might be an unrealistic choice on her part. It might be impossible. Mm-hmm. But her children have no rights to dictate where she lives just because they're her kids.
Is she living in her own home at this point, Bill?
She is, yes.
And she had the title to the home is in her name only?
Yes.
Okay. And so, all right. It seems to me...
Can I just ask one question?
Yeah, go ahead, please.
So, assuming the dispute can't be settled, you know, that there's always going to be a disagreement, does it go to a judge, or who ultimately makes the decision, assuming...
Well, Bill, somebody's going to have to take an initiative here.
Bill, listen to Peter, please. Go ahead, Peter.
Mom is in her home, and she wants to stay in her home, and she has resources to be able to stay there. It really shouldn't matter what the dissident children think, unless they're right and she's wrong. Unless mom is completely devoid of reason and can't provide for herself and needs the kind of assistance she can get. Maybe she can get it at home, but maybe she should be somewhere else. Somebody will then take an action to protect her. But if she's okay, if the protection she needs is to get these children out of her life and meddling with where she wants to be, then maybe she should go to the lawyer. Or maybe the child who is on her side should reach out for help. Although I would still say try to do it without involving the attorneys if you can. And if you can't, then the remedy would be to go out. It might be that mom having a lawyer will have someone who can speak up for her and who can talk to the children and find out what they want, maybe arrange a family meeting of some kind.
But also, Bill, with respect to the trust, I presume that the mom here had a lawyer who actually set up the trust. If that lawyer or that law firm is still around, that might make the simplest way of dealing with this if it can't be resolved on just a family basis. So good luck to you and good luck to this little lady who's obviously in between two of her kids.
Thanks so much, Rihanna.
Yeah, nice talking to you. By the way, someone called in to say, I don't have an internet hookup. How can I lay hands on an actual copy of Seniors and the Law? Let me give you the State Bar's phone number, and you can call them, and they'll tell you what to do. A call, of course, during normal business hours. I doubt that they're there right now. Area code 415-538-2280. Area code 415-538-2280. Call tomorrow. That's the number for pamphlets and guides, and I'm sure they will be very courteous to you and help. For those of you who do have an internet hookup, it's www.calbar.ca.gov, and then you can find the pamphlets and guides. Click that on, and it'll show you an order form. So that's what's available. All right, we have at
one.
Pardon? Hello? I heard someone speak. Let me see. We've got Paige. Paige, welcome to the program.
Hi, thank you very much. Appreciate the topic.
Sure. Go ahead.
Both of my parents are in their mid to late 70s. Neither of them have long-term health care insurance. And about 5 years ago, my father was diagnosed with Alzheimer's.
Mm.
He's been doing well. The medication he's on seems to have halted it somewhat, but he's slowly declining. They do have some assets, farmland, et cetera. They're not in the state of California. I am. They are not. And there was a comment made last, and let me back up. They've also put their assets into a living trust. I haven't seen the documentation, and I don't know exactly how it's set up, but last week there was a comment made by one of the attorneys on the same program that said one of the alternatives to possibly protecting your assets is for them to divorce. Can you comment to that?
Do you have any thoughts on that, Peter?
Sure. I mean, if it's a question about Medi-Cal, keep in mind, by the way, that our comments are restricted, or my comments are restricted to California eligibility.
Yeah.
If they're not in California, then what I'm going to say probably doesn't apply. But if they're divorced in California, the assets that belong to the spouse who is seeking eligibility are the ones that one looks at to determine whether that person is eligible. But a married couple can actually keep quite a bit more. And our court system has a number of mechanisms for greatly expanding what the well spouse can keep and still make the ill spouse eligible for long-term care Medi-Cal support. So the rules are much more favorable for a couple than for a single person, at least in California.
Yeah, the important thing would be to consult with a Medicaid specialist in the state where your parents live.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that would, and you can find out what they can keep as a married couple and whether it would be better for some reason for them to divorce.
And if they were to divorce just to protect their assets, and they may not even be willing to do that because it may be against their belief system, but to protect their assets, if they did divorce and then they remained living together, would that be an issue?
Well, it depends on what they're seeking. I mean, if they're living together, then obviously one of them is not in a nursing home and would not be eligible for long-term care Medicaid under any circumstances.
Yeah, remember that Medicaid for long-term care is in a skilled nursing facility. Then that's a very common misconception that people think that they can get that their parents' housing covered in assisted living or other types of facilities.
You know, Paige, let me just summarize very quickly what the program was last week. And very, very quickly, we were talking about family law, and the issue was a very recent California Supreme Court decision that determines when parties have separated and therefore their income, their assets becomes separate versus community. Which two people living together, married, et cetera, in California, whatever they acquire, unless they have some kind of prenuptial agreement, is community property. So that's different than what you're talking about now. So that's why, frankly, as Colleen has said, in that your parents are living in a different state, they really need to seek the legal advice of the appropriate person there. And that's the best advice you can give them.
Okay, thank you very much.
Yeah, I hope that's helpful, Paige.
Thank you.
Take care. Thank you very much for calling. All right, we do have a few minutes left. We have Julie. Welcome to the program.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm calling regarding the issue you were talking about. In that case, the co-tenant, the death of a co-tenant as an exclusion from real property reassessment. And I was confused by a couple of things you said. One, you said to call the State Board of Equalization, which I thought was strange, or to go to a lawyer, which I thought was really overkill. You can just go to your county assessor's office, and they will tell you. And if you're not comfortable with what the clerk says at the window, write him a letter and ask if there's an exclusion for your situation and what the requirements are. And then you can rely on the letter you get from them. So why you would spend money seeing a lawyer or calling an agency like the State Board of Equalization is beyond me.
Well, Julie, the State Board of Equalization provides all of the property tax guidance to the various county assessors. So the State Board of Equalization maintains all the consumer information sites.
Okay, and they would give you in writing what the exclusions are and what's required.
All of that is at the State Board of Equalization.
Okay. And you wouldn't have to go see a lawyer for your $35.
Well, you know, it's I'll interject here that the State Board of Equalization explains the co-tenancy exclusion very clearly, I think, and there is a form that you can get either on that site or from your county assessor. You're correct. You can get it from your county assessor. That is the affidavit I mentioned where you swear under penalty of perjury that you meet all the criteria.
Uh-huh.
And if you get a hold of that form and you look at it and you say, yep, 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 then perhaps that's all the help you need.
Okay.
You're right.
Thank you so much.
Okay.
All right. We have a few minutes if you'd like to call in, probably about another two or three. It's toll-free number is 866-798-8255 if you would like to call in. Peter, we've got about 3 minutes left of the program, and what thoughts do you have at this point that we haven't even touched upon, or perhaps you want to go back on?
Well, I just want to mention one thing to start with, which is that people can probably get this brochure at their senior center. So if you don't have access to the website and you want to find it at an easier site than just calling the state bar, I would imagine that most of the senior centers will have copies of this brochure. Also, the resource card that is put out by the Trust and Estate section of the state bar. So that's one way to get a hold of seniors in the law.
County law libraries, too. I'm going to make a plug for them. Would have
they should. They should have. They should have the county law libraries.
Oh, and can I also mention there are two other comparable guides that the CalBAR Foundation puts out. One's called Kids and the Law,
yes,
an A to Z guide for parents. And the other is When You Turn 18, Survival Guide for Teenagers. And like Seniors in the Law, all of these are available in English and in Spanish, and all for free. Up to, I think, they'll send you 200 copies at a time.
So there you are. You can start delivering them in your neighborhood. Again, for those of you who are not on the network, the Internet Network, the phone number for the State Bar for pamphlets and the guides is 415-538-2280. If you do have, if you are on the Internet, the website for the State Bar is www.calbar.ca.gov, and you can search for, very simply, pamphlets, guides, and see what there is as Colleen has talked about the guides, but there are also a number of pamphlets. And the Board of Legal Specialization also has pamphlets. So there's a lot of great information that's available if you go to the State Bar website or if you call the State Bar. So I hope that you will take advantage. Colleen.
One other thing we don't have time to get into, but I want to point out, is that this guide has a great discussion about elder abuse.
Yes.
How to recognize it, how to report it, and it has a great section on avoiding consumer scams.
Yes, yes.
Just terrific stuff. What's identity theft? How do I keep my Social Security number confidential? And it's just chock full. It covers a lot of different topics.
It's a very fine thing.
Very comprehensive.
It's very comprehensive. I'm sorry that we have not been able to take all of your calls, unfortunately. I want to thank both of you very much for joining me on the program. Colleen McAvoy and Peter Stern, thanks so much.
Oh, you're welcome. We enjoyed it.
Great to have you back. They are specialists in estate planning, trust, and probate law certified by the California Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar. Peter, at one point, was the chair of the Trust and Estate section of the State Bar. They've both been very active in the Trust and Estate section. So I thank you both for joining us on the program. For next week, by the way, I want to let you know, for those of you in California, the California topic will be landlord-tenant laws, issues, and disputes. My guests will be landlord-tenant attorneys Mark Seidenfeld and Sal Timpano. For listeners of the public radio satellite transmission, we'll have a discussion of the representation of plaintiffs in personal injury and wrongful death cases. My guest will be David Rappaport, a certified specialist in civil trial practice and president of the National Board of Trial Advocacy. Your legal rights production staff members are program engineer Kevin Vance, production assistant Martin McLean. This segment of Your Legal Rights has been made possible by the Trust and Estate section of the State Bar, the California Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar. The program is also funded by the trusts and estate section of the State Bar, of course, the labor and employment law section of the State Bar, the lawyer referral service of the Bar Association of San Francisco, the California Applicants Attorneys Association, the San Mateo County Bar Association, and the National Board of Trial Advocacy, which also funds the public radio satellite transmission of the program. Thank you very much for joining us on Your Legal Rights, and please join us next time. I'm Chuck Vinnie.